Protestant creation. It's Henry Morris coming into town in a little while, April 5th, and I'm going to leave this flyer here. The problem of evolution and creation is not a scientific problem. It's a philosophical and theological problem. But for 18 years, I was intimidated from challenging evolution because I was self-conscious about the scientific implications. And it was by reading the Protestant creationists that I began to see the whole hoax. There is no scientific proof or whatever of evolution. So if you're worried about the ravages done to faith and morals by evolution, I'd urge you at least get to see Morris. He's getting on in years. He comes from San Diego. I've never met him, but I read his stuff. Secondly, Alice Grayson has this beautiful angel's prayer and a Fatima, and she asks that people join her in this adoration before the Blessed Sacrament, wherever, in your parish, pleading with the sacramental Jesus for help for the church. And most of you probably know it. Alice probably has twisted your arm already, but I'd like to reinforce that. Thirdly, I have a partial list of tapes. You will see I talk forever. I've written only one book, but I've talked maybe 1,500 lectures in the last 30 years, and I usually tape everything, both to protect myself, because that's what I really said, not what you say I said. Also, it spreads the message, so I have quite a few copies of this. Again, there is a booklet here, which I hope some of you are familiar with, by a Mark Miravalli from Franciscan University. I have about 5 copies free, on condition you swear to read it. It's a very interesting book, and I have a petition, which is one of many. There are several million Catholics already signing the petition about asking Rome to define dogmatically what Rome has always believed and the Church has always believed in a very limited sense, in a precise sense, that the Blessed Virgin has the right to be called co-redemptrix, mediatrix, and advocate. So I'm going to leave that petition around there. Finally, I was interviewed by a very nice girl yesterday, Deborah somebody, from this little paper, The Servant. It's a monthly. Andrew here is a managing editor, sales editor or something. In other words, he's trying to justify his salary for The Servant. And they say the next edition will probably print that interview. And I forgot what it was about now, but I think it was about homeschooling. I'm losing my cool, but it was something to do with homeschooling, and I give a general approximation of where I think things are going in church and state and education and everything else. And there's one other thing. You have a very low power station, channel 53, which they swear is going to be upgraded to 1,000 watts this week. If so, you will have maybe I'll be the first program on. I did a 1-hour program on this general question, too, of homeschooling. So maybe I'll be the inauguration of our mega station, 1,000 watts in the Minneapolis area. The station is owned by a dear friend of mine, Father Kenneth Baker, one of the great Jesuits, and I'm so pleased to have known dear Father Baker for over 20 years. My topic now is this whole question of sex education in the school. And I'm going to combine 2 different aspects. I'm going to start a little autobiography because it makes it come right home to you. When you hear me, I'm 69 years old, and I'll start telling you about my own life. It won't get into the Inquirer. It's not that exciting. And nobody will get me on Geraldo won't want me either. But on the basis of what happened to me, I'll then introduce this whole subject of public sex education, which I think education in the schools, Catholic or public, I think it's the most abominable, unholy thing I have ever met. I've been in education 19 years as a student, 40 years as a professor, and even in the Army, I was teaching charm school. I was in the Signal Corps fixing radios, and we had to teach teachers how to teach, so we went through that stuff. But I've been a teacher all my life. I have never seen anything so diabolical as sex education in the school, and I know sometimes the intention is innocent, but it's really not. You're destroying children. and we have the ravaged generations all around us. From the point of view of biography, I was reared in Jersey City, New Jersey, which in those days was Sleepy Town. Nothing ever happened. 300,000 people there. And I went to school in eighth grade with the Sisters of Charity. Then at the age of 12 and a half, I went to high school under the Jesuit. The greatest 4 years of my life under the Jesuit. They were Catholic, they were serious, and so on. And I was about 13, just about entering adolescence, and I didn't think of girls, believe it or not. I was thinking of model airplanes and fishing and all this other stuff. So we walk into Regis, and this wonderful priest, Father Burke, he was a student counselor, he gathers us. There were 200 boys, and that school was like a real tough school. At the end of 4 years, they threw out 100. The only way to get in was by scholarship, and they threw out 50% of the people. And Burke's whole point was religion and morality. He was our friend. The rest of the school was our enemy. It was like the Marine Corps. Burke was the chaplain who was on your side when the enemy was harassing you. So he gave us a beautiful talk in the church or the chapel about purity. I said, what's his problem? I mean, why does he mention, but he did it in the most respectful way, but as if to say, you're young men now, and you'll soon have all sorts of temptations, but I beg you to stay close to God. Now, he didn't give us the five different ways to fornicate, the four different ways to contracept. We knew what he was talking about. He used very delicate language, but he said, boys, I want you to be pure. And that was our introduction to Regis. And it didn't even relate to me. It was another year before, say, I grew physically enough to be impressed by it. But I already knew there was something momentous going on. This man had our salvation at stake. And I knew he spoke for the church. My own parents were very reticent. Not one word from either father or mother about where babies came from. So you could say I learned it in the street, but I learned, which means I learned it from a buddy of mine, who was a good man. And he himself, thank God, was a very reverent man, boy, about 3 years older than I. So we were bicycling and going fishing and so on. And I must have said, well, where do babies come from? Because I knew women say we're going to the hospital to have a baby, and I never believed in the story. So in the most reverent way, he gave me his version, and it took about 5 minutes, and that was the end of the story. So I had my companion in the street. I loved the way the street, buddy. I had a priest, and then I had Latin, English, algebra, and everything else, and that's what my adolescence was done. And I had this awe of girls, and it was beautiful. It was an all-boys school, and once in a while we'd go to an all-girls school, and we'd even be afraid to ask them to dance, but even that is nice. Not that I could ever dance. But there was, and you know, the Catholic Church has always encouraged separation of the sexes after grade school. In fact, it used to prohibit co-education, which is the wisest rule I've ever had. Well, then I went to college. I went to graduate school, got a PhD by the age of 24, and we were in, I got out of college in 49, PhD in 52. It was a dream time to grow up in. I know there were sin. I know there were impurities, but at least it was never glamorized or glorified. At least you could walk down the street without being assaulted on all sides by immodest speech and immodest dress. And we all knew if a certain character walked in the room, there was something unsavory about the character. We didn't judge the character, but we knew there was a noble goal for us. There's a mystery attached to sex, and that it's intimately linked to marriage and to love. And you know, the French have a beautiful version of the Ninth Commandment. The way we read it in the normal catechism is, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, which is something what the way Moses put it, but he also adds, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, his maidservant, his donkey, his this or that. It covers quite a few things. Well, that's the tenth. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's good. But the French rewrote this thing beautifully. Thou shalt not seek the work of the flesh outside marriage. I told you. Not that the work of the flesh is evil or dirty, it belongs to marriage. And that's really what we need to know. And I got that sense in grade school with the nuns. They taught the sixth and ninth commandment, never descending into gynecology, never explaining every single function of every single organ. But we learned about the sins against purity and the sixth against the sixth and ninth commandment in a very positive way, but no dwelling on it, still less with graphic pictures, which remind you of latrine art. That's just what, when I look at the sex education manual, I figure I'm in the men's room with some pervert drawing on the wall. But no, these are transparencies that everybody has to see. I got out of the Army in 54, and in the Army, I'm 24 years old with a PhD. They put me, this is during the Korean War, they put me in the Signal Corps fixing radios. That's as close as the Army can get to matching you up to your talent. I didn't care. I had a ball. I was in Germany at the time. About 2 months into the Army, they show you all kinds of films. And in a 1.5-hour film, they tell you how VD is transmitted. That's about it. And that's all you really need. You don't need a graduate course in microbiology. So the Army couldn't care less about morality, but the Army was worried about VD, because it's a big problem among any population. All right. I get out in 20, I'm 26 years old, start teaching at Fordham University. Things were still good. This is in 1954. I start teaching at Fordham University. In 1958, I married. And my first wife, by the way, was a girl from France who had been my pupil, so she was properly instructed. She took me for 11 courses. And she's the one who gave me that French version of the Ninth Commandment. She had been raised in an anti-Catholic home. The French are notorious for anti-clericalism. But her parents had integrity enough to send her to Sunday school, where she had a marvelous priest who taught her her faith and the commandments and everything else. We get married, and we're living in Jersey City, and she didn't like the city. Too noisy, too dusty, and all that. So we buy property 38 miles from Times Square, New York. Times Square is the heartbeat of America, you know, where all the action is. And we have 4.5 acres in New Jersey, in the middle of 70 acres, a dirt road that lasts 0.5 mile, deer and pheasant on the property, the whole bit. The first building you see is a Catholic church, Catholic school, Catholic convent. So I said to my wife, we've got it. We had one child then, and then 3 other children followed. So when Billy is 6 or 7, he goes to the first grade, and we start worrying. This is just about 1967, something like that. He comes home saying, you know, Mom, sister says you don't have to go to Mass if you don't feel like it. Sister said the story of Jonah and the whale is a myth. And this sister was nice, by the way. I know her. Real nice nun. But she had gone to a workshop. That's the big trouble. Sister workshop goes to Father Heretic's workshop. So, and then they came out with this comic book thing called Junior High Times. A very stupid thing. See, the catechism wasn't enough. The Bible's not enough. Bible history, lives of saints aren't enough. We got to make like religion like relevant to these kids. So Junior High Times for this month, Billy brought it home. Should you smoke pot? And it's a comic book type version, shows kids arguing or rapping about pot. And Steve here says, well, why not? It feels good. It don't hurt nothing. And so on. Peter here says, no. It deadened your brain and so on. And guess what? So they give you both sides of it. Then they say to the reader, what do you think? You 7-year-old theologian, you 7-year-old Moses, what are your values? See, we're not going to teach you anything. That would be imposing a value system on this. Well, I was very alarmed. My first wife was much more alarmed than I was sleepy. A little ad, meanwhile, had appeared in the secular press saying that the school district is going to bring in sex ed. I said, gee, that's strange. They're going to have a whole course on sex ed. So I asked the pastor of my parish, a good Franciscan, I said, may I use the hall to speak? He said, oh, sure, Bill. So we put up a little notice, and about 35 people showed up at the parish. Dr. Mara is going to speak on sex Sex and Sex Education, I think that was the title. 35 people show up. One of them or several of them belong to the John Birch Society with headquarters in Belmont. And they had those guys know how to run things. They had a microphone, they taped me. It was perfectly all right with me. And I base my whole talk on Dietrich von Hildebrand, friend of Alice and Ed Grayson here, and under whom I got my MA and PhD, a beautiful man, beautiful man. He had been best man at my wedding. So I was talking about the mystery of sex, the intimacy of sex, the privacy of sex. Isn't that dirty? Catholic Church has a sacrament called matrimony, which weds a man and a woman in holy matrimony, which enabled each to bear his nakedness before the other. It is this garden that enables you to breach the veil of intimacy and share each other's nakedness and share each other's intimate relationship. Don't tell me this Catholic Church thinks sex is dirty. It thinks impurity is dirty. And impurity precisely means sex isolated from wedded love. The whole Playboy philosophy, that's the dirt. But we think sex is intimate and private. So I gave this little talk, and the next day or two, I got a phone call from the Birch headquarters asking me to go around the country talking against sex education, because apparently it was being pushed all around. I knew nothing. I never read papers, had no television, never listened to the radio, and I was enjoying life in the woods. I'm a natural woodsman. I just love the country. I love oak trees. I love fires and everything else. So I went around the country, and the Birch Society wanted me to push the notion that sex ed was a communist plot to demoralize and destroy American youth. Now, it's perfectly possible that was it. But I told them, I said, that's not my forte. I don't want to show you all these different links of what organization has personnel belonging to this and that. I said, I want to take the issue of sex ed itself and show you, I don't care who's pushing it. It's bad. So I went around, I hit many states in 1 2-week period. I must have had 2 weeks off because of some holiday, maybe the Easter holiday. This young fellow, Chip Wood, booked me for around 10 talks. I remember going from Indiana to Ohio to Kentucky, maybe to Michigan, maybe to Chicago, and they had this thing really done right. So a lot of parents were very impressed with what I said, and this was the beginning. This might have been 1970 or so. This was the beginning of, or 69, this was the beginning of the resistance that I found, and I helped start, to sex education in the school. I want to summarize my points there. Alice had the kindness, Alice Grayson, to reprint at great cost to herself this series of articles I wrote and von Hildebrand wrote, which was published in The Wanderer. And I edited all of von Hildebrand's work, so he gave a lecture at my university lecture at the Roman Forum called The Case Against Sex Education. Then I give a lecture, the same thing, in a different direction. We put the two together, and we added a little final word by some good psychologist, Rhoda Lorand. I believe she's dead now, because she was quite old when she came into the group. And it was simply called Sex Education, the Basic Issues. And von Hildebrand gave his usual profound analysis of it. He is a master of insight into the sphere of the deeply personal. He's a great philosopher of the human person, of the will, of the heart, of the mind, of sex, of person, of love and marriage. And his new wife, Alice, who's now a widow, is similar to that. So Hildebrand had this real sense for the human, quite apart from the moral aspect, but from the human aspect of the privacy and intimacy of wedded love. He did not think it's something to be displayed on stage. It's pure, but it's intimate, and it's private. In any case, this little thing was printed in The Wanderer, and Alphonse Matt Sr. and Alphonse Matt Jr., I guess both of them, They printed up about 5,000 copies, and in those days, I got the copies for 10 cents each, believe it or not. That shows you what's happened to the dollar and so on. I must have moved 3,000 or 4,000 of those copies. It went through 14 printings. Then, no more. Alice Grayson somehow got a copy of it, and she reprinted it. And right now, she since that was written in 1969, but I defy you to show me one slight mistake in that booklet. And I invite you to see how prescient von Hildebrand and I were. The sex ed monolith was just starting to get into place in America. We somehow understood it because we were formed by church teaching, by the way. And we didn't have this silly kneeling before secular psychology and stupid family living stuff. So that booklet has gone through a lot. Well, right now, I have written maybe another 40 pages on sex ed called What Does the Catholic Church Really Teach About Sex? And the Two Directions of Sex Education. Then there's been some great work done by friends of ours in what the official church documents about sex, and then an updated critique of later sections, which are at least trying to be good. The original sex act programs were right out of hell. There are certain programs in education and chastity which are trying to get it right. They don't. There's goodwill. I'm not accusing these people of trying to destroy innocence and all that, but they miss so many points. So my son, Billy, but above all his new wife, Carolyn, new, I mean, that just recently married. He doesn't trade in wives, but he has this a student of mine, a former student of mine, Carolyn, and Carolyn is working on trying to collate all the material and giving it some sort of a linguistic consistency, but it's taking much longer than we thought. And eventually, though, we hope this book will be out. It's not going to be a little book, but it's going to be a pretty sizable thing, and we're going to have to charge more than we wanted to charge, but I want this to get real mass distribution because it's a kind of madness. The world is consumed with lust and blood. All around us, every sort of abomination. You would think decent educators would do something to arrest the tides of blood and lust. And instead, they give us these tasteless, ineffective education in human sexuality. Meanwhile, the problem gets worse, and their answer is we need more education in human sexuality. So I'm hoping that the reissuing of this book will sound the alarm, and you would think that Catholics, with 2,000 years of church teaching, church living, of saints, of persecution, of temptation, you would think they would know better than to consult some psychologist when it comes to the tender souls of children. But your thinking is wrong. The last 30 years have brought in all sorts of error, sometimes well-intentioned. I'm not always accusing people of conspiracy or whatever, but they don't know what they're doing. They act as if the church teaching in Pius XI, the Christian education of youth, or that passé, that was 50 years ago. Things change. So, here briefly is my argument. See, von Hildebrand was the greatest genius I have ever met. The only one that come close to him is his greatest pupil, Dr. Zeifert, who is the rector of the International Academy of Philosophy in Liechtenstein. But Zeifert is where he is because he's building on Hildebrand. He could not be the great thinker he is without Hildebrand. But Hildebrand never wasted words. He was a philosopher's philosopher. He did not always have the catchy phrase. He did not always have the idiomatic clarity which could make him popular. He will never be popular. I have the gift of gab. I talk plain talk. And I don't even have the inclination or the ability to be diplomatic either. I have no time to have all this double talk. Well, perhaps on the one hand, no, I say what I have to say. If you don't like it, okay, let's talk honorably. Don't start accusing me of stuff. Let's talk man to man. So whenever Hildebrand would give a lecture, in small groups like this, or sometimes in a large auditorium. After the lecture, the audience was respectful and appreciative, but and I would come along and say, now I hope everyone understands that Hildebrand said this, and then all of a sudden the audience would wake up, because I could encapsulate the thought. So he wrote this essay on sex education, then I wrote my more popular version in that same booklet. And my popular version is this. In the first place, I want to clarify, what do we mean? When people like Hildebrand and I and you mothers and Mother's Watch and Veil of Innocence, what do we mean when we say we are unhappy with sex education? We are opposed to sex education. Do you think we mean that we don't want courses in biology which study the reproductive system? Not at all. You can study biology. It's kind of boring, if you ask me. And the pictures there are so scientific. They're so partial, I doubt if anyone has any temptation to get purity. So if you want to, you can study the kidneys, you can study the urinary tract, it doesn't really, you can study the reproductive system, the high school bio, and I mean bona fide science. We have never opposed that. Do you think we're opposed to education and chastity? Please. We want that. I got that. I said in my freshman year, Father Burke told us about purity, be pure. But as time went on in religion class, he would become more and more emphatic. He gave us a wonderful series of talks on contraception, against contraception, in the most delicate way. The minute he would walk in, he'd say the Hail Mary on his knees. He said, I'm going to talk to you about something very serious. I want to give you the church's teaching on contraception. I remember he said Fortune magazine predicted that by the year 1950, this was the year 1943, he was talking to us, by the year 1950, some 20% of all marriages would be on contraception, and so on and so on. And we couldn't believe this. We never heard of anything like that. My mother used to say we take babies as God sent them. She married late, so she had only four of us. Her mother had nine. No big deal. We welcomed the kids. Sometimes it was economically hard, but there was a sense of life, noise, kids, food. That's the Italian life. Fights too. We're not saying it was ideal. I mean, this was what life on earth is all about. Not all of this soul searching, this inward psychology, and so on. Father Burke would give us these talks on contraception. And then finally, he would give us talks on marriage. We were seniors now, and by then we knew the facts of life. But in the most respectful, hushed tones, in the most indirect way of alluding, and did not get detailed or graphic, he would simply state what the marital act is, and then he would show us why we absolutely have to be pure. And he was not afraid to mention hell. The four-letter word, I know that. So is soul, a four-letter word. But he knew that he's not talking to saints. He's talking to struggling boys who are trying to be good. And there are 10 ways to go to hell, 10 commandments. It's not just sex, but sex happens to be the easiest one. It's the most delicious way to go to hell. Just become impure, let everything go. So, and then he had this, from day one at Regents High School, the word spread around, if you got a problem, you go see Father Burke. His door was always open. Sometimes you had to schedule yourself. That was the only time you could have an excused absence from Regents. If you ever missed a class, you had to show your surgeon's note that he removed your kidney. Then you were excused. But Regents had the toughest policy on cutting a class. You didn't dare cut a class. But if you could show a note from Father Burke, Bill Mara has been to see me, that's the end of the story. You could take 2 periods, 3 periods off, that was it. So a lot of my buddies, they were more advanced than I, more problematic than I, they say, I'm going to see Burke today. And they, whatever their problem was, if they had a question about where babies came from, about what is this perversion, how do you get BD, he would answer them one-on-one. That's the whole point. So, and then by senior year, we had retreats with great Jesuits, and we had these religion courses, and in a respectful way, we were told church teaching on chastity, we were told about the problems of contraception, we were told, this was one of the greatest bit of advice I ever met from a Jesuit retreat master. He said, unless you're going to rob the cradle, we're about 17 now, the girl you're going to marry, if you marry, is alive right now. Why don't you say a Hail Mary for her every day? That's a beautiful thought. You don't know her name. You don't know if you'll ever meet her. But if you do marry, that girl was already alive when you heard this priest. So he gave us this sense of the beauty and dignity of the sex act within marriage, of the horror of impurity, not once. His speech, his gestures, his illustration aroused us. They were not temptations against chastity because he surrounded with modest speech and reverent speech. So, therefore, what do I mean about sex? What, when I'm opposing sex ed, I'm not against biology, I'm not against high school, I'm not against exhortations to chastity. I'm against what everybody's putting in the curriculum. So K-12 curriculum, it started in my, I became aware of it in 1968 or so, and the Catholic schools went through 20 different versions with Benzig and becoming a person and everyone, and I finally lost count, and I am not a scholar, I can't keep files and all that, so I know what they're teaching, and you say, but you haven't seen the latest edition. Well, the latest edition is just a recycle. They'll just put a little more holy water on this. After giving an endless talk about contraception or about everything else, they'll say, well, God loves chastity. They'll put G-O-D in, and that's supposed to legitimate it. And they'll give a few meaningless words about chastity and good and evil, but their whole bent in the Catholic schools, I'm talking about the original text, and above all the secular schools, was to desensitize young people, was to let it all hang out. And many programmed in Catholic schools, they had the